All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
Ah, there we go.
Yes.
About time we got some applause.
I know, right? Coming to you live from everywhere, places that like to ban people.
So. Absolutely. I don't think we have not gotten a censor warning yet, but
nah.
I don't know. Maybe we will.
I don't know. We'll see.
Buddy of ours, I was just talking to him yesterday, David, who was on our show a couple of weeks ago, made the awful mistake of using a word that should not be used on Facebook and got banned.
Yeah, got to be careful.
Got taken down. It's a crazy world.
It is.
1984.
That was a good year, actually. You know, that was what? End of middle school, first of high school.
That's right.
Good. That was a good time right there.
Absolutely.
It was like a Thriller album coming out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like.
Simpler times.
Simpler times. Like, phone was attached to the wall. Didn't have to take it with you.
That's right.
Man, like we sound old.
A cord that was like 100 yards. Probably the length of a football field. You could stretch that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Stretch it back to your room or to the nearest closet. Sit in there and talk to your sweetie.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then somebody else picks up on the other line in a different room and gets to listen on your conversations. It's beautiful. Yeah.
See? Mom, get off the phone.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today. We got a great guest who will be joining us shortly. We're going to be talking about how to write killer copy and do it really fast, right?
Fast.
Okay. We talk about copywriting on the show. But our guest is going to be, in fact, he's got a book out called How to Write Killer Copy Fast. So we're going to hear all about it today.
So it's kind of like persuasion and the time it takes you to drink a pint today.
Yes, that's right.
As opposed to so fast, like Superman, I guess, right?
That's right.
Faster than a speeding bullet.
Speeding bullet.
Superhero copy. Maybe that's what we should call it. That's superhero copy.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right. So before we get into that, we've got some, we've got to direct our attention to some beverages that we have on tap.
Yes.
And I'm afraid we might be disappointed with what you have to bring to the table today.
Well, you know, in honor of our new president,
something old,
something that we've seen before in an episode, but it is the strongest beer I have in honor of our new president. How about that? I'll just leave it at that. It's the strongest beer in my fridge at the moment. And it's one we just had a few weeks ago. So it's the full grown beast.
Ah, yes. I love the beast.
It's one of those weeks where I got to just kind of clear out some things in the beer fridge. So
you got to do it sometimes.
I've got this and then, while you and the guests are talking, because you know, this is a full-grown beast. For those who aren't aware, this is a 16.3% alcohol stout, imperial stout, bourbon barrel imperial stout. So, like I said, in honor of our new president, I'm drinking the strongest beer I could find.
Absolutely. Because by the time he finishes that, he'll sound like Joe Biden talking in his press conferences. So,
yeah.
That's
And then I've got a Guinness here to follow it up in case I run out while we're all three talking.
All right, so you don't have any original craft beer club. That's not an original craft beer selection.
We will give
them some props today.
Give them some love, man. Give them some love.
I'll give them some love. So this episode, what kind of love were we giving?
Yeah, that's good. Let me just keep going. Sorry.
I'll just say this episode is brought to you by our friends at the Original Craft Beer Club. You can learn more about them by going to persuasionbythepint.com/craft beer. So that's all I'm going to say about them today.
Yeah, good stuff. Hey, they deliver it right to your doorstep. You don't have to go anywhere.
That's right.
Just order and it shows up every month.
Yes. Very convenient, especially when we're about to go maybe shut down the whole nation again. So,
it's about to all be over, man.
All right. Well, I've got a great one. I've got an Oscar Blues coming back on the show today. Man, I tell you, they've got such good selections out there. So, today I've got
that's a big time craft brewery right there, right?
Yes. Yeah. So nationwide. It's an Irish style porter brewed with coconut and chocolate called Death by Coconut.
Wow.
I think they've cornered the market on the Death by, I think they've got a number of these. Death by Chocolate, Death by, you name it.
Speaking of the 80s, right? You remember Bennigan's?
Bennigan's.
The restaurant chain?
Oh, man. That's like such an old name.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that kind of Irish pub. But it's like Applebee's and Bennigan's. And
right.
They had a dessert called Death by Chocolate that was just amazing. It was like this giant piece of chocolate cake.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't Death by Coconut, but it was Death by Chocolate. So as soon as you said that, I was like, yes, that's...
So if you finished this piece of cake, was there any, they give you a free cake? Do they give you a free meal?
You just got a stretcher to go out on. So, cause it was just super rich. It's like, a giant piece of chocolate cake covered in chocolate, like the same stuff they dip, you know, Dairy Queen cones in, like a magic shell on a chocolate cookie bed with chocolate sprinkles. Holy like it was cow. Just chocolate on top of chocolate on top of chocolate. It was just.
Probably like 5,000 calories.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Easy. Of course, I was in my 20s then, so it didn't matter. I could eat whatever.
Speaking of which, I had a physical today. I hadn't had a physical in quite a while. I don't know if you've gone through the experience because, you know, with us guys, we're getting up there, Sean, so mm-hmm. we gotta get the annual checkup.
And, I've not done that in a while.
Oh, okay.
Long while.
Well, decades. I was relieved. I checked
you're in
out,
good shape.
Despite the fact that we have a brew every week, and
hey, that's it's plants, right? It's hops and stuff.
That's right.
Veggies. It's like get our veggies every week.
He did encourage me to cut down on the cigars, although I don't, you know, smoke them very often. But he's like, you really shouldn't do that at all.
I mean, I've heard fermented foods are good for you. I've heard veggies are good for you. So it's kind of like, you know, drinking a fermented beverage and eating your Brussels sprouts. I mean, that's really all beer is.
That's right.
I mean, it's kind of like hops and Brussels sprouts kind of look the same.
If it comes from the ground, man.
Yeah.
Why not?
So. All right. Let me see that beer there and give it a taste and swig and it's dark stuff.
So I got to read this. It's a bitter, bittersweet chocolate flavor comes together with raw, desiccated coconut.
Wow. Sounds serious.
that really sounds serious. Desiccated coconut and a malt beer bill based around Simpson's extra dark crystal.
Oh yeah. That's good crystal there.
Not the blue magic crystal. We're talking the extra dark crystal.
Yeah, Simpson's extra dark crystal.
The result is a rich, desserty flavor with a light, approachable mouthfeel. So this is 6.5% ABV.
Okay.
Released back in 2015. First time I've had it. So we'll see how it works.
All right. Well, cheers.
Cheers. That was a short one, right? There we go.
There we go.
Oh, man. Well, I'm going to go first because we know yours.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It's not great, actually.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I think we had these last time. They were it's a little too much alcohol in it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's kind of medicine-y, right?
Yeah, it's got that medicine-y taste to it.
Yeah, I was going to bring mine back on. Because I still didn't have my taste buds back, but I actually couldn't wait that long and I went ahead and finished it.
So you said yours is good though, right?
This is really good. This is,
So it's not overpowering coconut?
Not overpowering, but if you don't like coconut, you probably wouldn't like this. I actually like coconut, but it's not you actually taste the coconut, not initially, but right after it's kind of the aftertaste. So I like it.
All right, so on a scale of 1 to 5 pints, you give it a...
I am going to give this... I'm going to give this a... I'm going to give this a 4.6.
Nice, 4.6. Wow. 4.6. Wow, I may have to run out and grab some of that.
It's really good.
Yeah.
But like I said, a warning, if you don't like coconut, you're not going to like it.
I love the taste of coconut. I hate the texture. Like if you get the coconut cake or icing that's got the flakes of coconut, I don't like the coconut texture.
Not an Almond Joy guy, huh?
No, no. But I like the coconut flavor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I love the smell of coconut.
Sure.
So I just don't, yeah, it's that texture that doesn't do it for me, the flaky stuff.
Well, this would be like, this tastes kind of like an Almond Joy because you got the chocolate and the coconut.
Yeah. So no texture, just drink it down. The drinking Almond Joy.
Absolutely.
That somebody should make a beer called Almond Joy Beer. They'll do a cross branding.
It's coming.
Like all those candy bars, you could turn into craft beers and do cross marketing.
Yep.
You could have a Snickers beer. You could have a Reese's beer. I mean, you have all those flavors anyway. So nobody's done nobody's done the co-branding yet.
If they come out with a Kit Kat, stout, I'm there, man.
Really? That's your bar. That's your candy bar, huh?
Yeah.
Do you see the new Kit Kat coming out? It's mocha.
Mm,
it's got a mocha cookie with the Kit Kat.
No, that sounds good. I've tried the mint. You know, they've got this new mint flavored. It's not very good.
Yeah, you should go over to Japan. They have apparently like Kit Kat is like huge over there. And they have all kinds of flavors that we don't have here. Ooh. Like green tea Kit Kat, like all these different flavors of, I don't like green tea either, but like that's how crazy it gets. So. Hey, you know, it's funny how marketing is different in one area of the world.
It is.
You know, stuff we take for granted, they don't have, and vice versa. So,
yeah.
All right. Is our guest bored? Does he leave yet?
No, he's not. I don't think he's fallen asleep quite yet. So he's in our green room. So I'm going to pull up before I introduce him, bring him out of the green room. I'll pull up his all of his bio. All right. So we got Jack Turk. He is the author of How to Write Killer Copy Fast. And he's going to be talking to us about writing copy. You can find him over at writekillercopyfast.com. He also wrote for Dan Kennedy back in the day. You and I both got the GKIC letters there for a while. He wrote from 2012 to 2014, was the head copywriter at GKIC. And Dan said of all the writers on staff who tried to capture his voice, Jack did the best job. So we're really happy to have him on to share his background. And
that's high praise. Let's bring him on with a big round of applause.
There we go. There he is.
I am honored. Holy cow.
How you doing, Jack?
I'm doing excellent, Jonathan and Sean.
Well, good,
thanks.
Good.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on today. You know, we put out, I was telling Sean yesterday, we put out these, a lot of our queries each week for our podcast guests on Help a Reporter. And you'd be amazed, you know, you put out a topic on copywriting and you'd be amazed at like all of, so we typically will get like 30 to 40 responses on a query request, and 99% of them that are written by copywriters are horrible. You know, he's like, are you a copywriter? Because these are all terrible. But yours obviously captured our attention because you put obviously, you know, in your reply, I mean, obviously some of your background, what you've done, obviously your book and everything. So interest, but you'd be amazed at some of the ones that just say, I work to provide the best copywriting for our clients, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, really? Who cares?
Yeah, you did a nice job. Like you could tell you actually at least looked at our site and talked about beer in the next to last paragraph. That's always a plus. Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh, well, yeah, I even brought some. I think it's actually a good lead into just the whole discussion of marketing. Mm-hmm. I didn't mention Irish Death, which is from Iron Horse Brewery in Ellensburg, Washington. So I'm going to give them a shout out. It's excellent.
And all right, Jack, just a second here. I think, Sean, are you here? Is he breaking up on your end? Or is it just
me? His video is frozen right now, Jack, and you're okay. a little warbly.
Okay. I'm going to move then, buddy.
Yeah, if you're on a Wi-Fi, maybe get closer to your
station.
To your router.
I'll try to get a little closer to the router.
Okay. Get closer to the Wi-Fi tree. See if you can pick up.
Let's see. How's this?
That's better.
Is it doing any better?
Yeah, it's not breaking up now.
Hot dog. Okay.
So go back. Tell us what you've got, because you brought a beverage on.
I did. I'm going to turn on the lights. Okay. Sorry for the inconvenience and all the
That's all right.
idiocy there.
No
all
worries. Right.
So I brought Irish Death from Iron Horse Brewery in Ellensburg, Washington. This is Aloha Death, and it's actually they do a bunch of different things, one of which they have a number of different types. Irish Death is sort of like the platform, and they bring out different versions of the beer throughout the year. Aloha Death, I was listening to you earlier, you're talking about a coconut beer. Aloha Death is a coconut. They also have Mocha Death, which has a coffee flavor to it. They also have, right now, their current one is PB and Death.
PB. Nice. Oh, I would love to try that. Now, what brewing company is that?
Iron Horse Brewery.
Oh, Iron Horse. Okay.
Iron Horse out of Ellensburg, a tiny little, again, all these, I mean, we are living in the golden age.
Yes. Oh, for sure.
Craft beer, no question about it.
Yeah. Except that there's a lot of IPAs we could do without that.
Oh, good Lord.
That's right.
When I saw your beers, I said, these are my people.
Absolutely.
The marketing and dark beers.
Yes, right. I mean, you know, to our sponsor, like Craft Beer Club, they send out about half and half. And I just can't, I can't develop a taste for the IPAs. Just can't do it. So it's the dark beers that are they're good. So we got quite a theme going here. We got two deaths. We got an Aloha Death, a Death by Coconut. And then I've got the Full Grown Beast, which is from the pits of hell itself. So like we're on today.
Tell Jack again, what's the ABV alcohol by volume on that?
Oh, you want the details. Hang on. I think it is 6.56.
Okay. So we're in the 6.5 range. Sean, what is yours again?
16.3.
So just a warning, Jack. Sean may be drifting off by the end of this. Who knows? But
it'll really kick in like the next episode. One. Exactly. Is when it really kick in. But right. I'm impressed, Jack. You read your can without glasses. I mean, that's impressive.
No kidding.
I can't do that anymore.
It's getting crazy. I'll hold it out way out there. Yeah. Okay.
So you got quite the background, Jack.
Absolutely.
So you were with, when were you with GKIC from 2012 to 15? Is that what
2012 to 15? Yeah. Before that,
I bought most of the stuff that I bought from them is probably in those years.
Really?
Same with me. I think I stopped being a subscriber once Dan sold. When was that? Like, what, 2 or 3 years back or something like that?
Been like 14 times, hasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I kind of missed the golden age. I mean, I was in the golden age, I think, because Dan was involved with, can't think of his name at the moment.
Bill.
Bill. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, Bill Glazer. Yeah.
Yeah, he and Bill, that was sort of the prime time. Dan had sold it to Bill, and then that was sort of the golden age with Dan being heavily involved and Bill just ramping it up to new heights and pitching that, you know, being great at sending emails that pitched, you know. And then Bill sold it to basically Bain Capital. Let's just be blunt. That's what the – and I got involved then from 2012 to 2015. I left. I've still been involved with them. I'm still – now it's Adam Witte who owns it.
Yeah, runs it. I saw that. And that was in the last 6 months or year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That
happened. And I've been with them. I've still stayed with them. I've been doing stuff with them, ever since I left in 2015. But I was still doing stuff. I worked on a lot of different projects, wrote a ton of copy for them still. I was the editor for the Renegade Millionaire book. I put it all together. I took their copy. It was their content, and I put it together. I did the same thing for Magnetic Marketing book, worked as the editor on that, and wrote some transitional stuff and whatever, but was heavily involved in that book as well. And I've just been they're great people. I mean, what's great about Adam is he gets that it is the Church of Dan.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and they are spreading the gospel of Dan, and that they're all about the Church of Dan and fostering his legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because when Dan's not around, things go south. Like their revenue.
Yeah, they drifted a little bit, but I did the best I could to keep it well on state.
Yeah, I left when it started turning into a magazine, and it had columns from, 46 different people and that kind of stuff. That's about the time I checked out, and I never really checked back in after that. So, but enough about that. Like, let's talk about Jack, because Jack's our guest, and I'm really intrigued by this. Jonathan sent this over to me, your response to the query, and you said your shtick is writing effective copy and writing it fast, and I'd have to say that I'm probably the slowest copywriter on earth. So I'm really curious about your secrets and things like this. I've never been a fast copywriter, so I'm curious to kind of see why you went down that route and kind of how you got there, and then any other tips that you're willing to give out to the people.
Okay. The first thing I basically say, there's three different keys to writing copy fast. The first thing is mindset. Then there's tools and having a system. Mm-hmm. So I'll talk about mindset first. The first thing with mindset is, and this is something I learned a long time ago. I'm going to give credit to Steve Manning, who wrote a book on like how to write a book in 14 days, which is a great book. I don't even know if it's still available. I don't even know if he's still around or not, but he made the point that people get, and I totally agree with this. We have this notion in our head that the longer you take on something as a writer, the better it will be. And that is totally false. Mm-hmm. There's no correlation to how much time you spend on something and how good it is. I have a personal example of, I spent probably 15 years on a screenplay. Literally 15 years. It was going to be about a medieval fair, and it had a wizard and all that sort of nonsense in it. And I did research. I spent hours and hours and hours, months on researching medieval fairs and really understanding what happened. They were real things, you see the Renaissance fairs. They were real things. Those were big deals, and they were a big part of the economy back then and everything. So I did all this research, and I actually managed to get this screenplay. I finished it. I got it in front of Imagine Studios, Ron Howard's production company. I got it to a reader.
Wow.
And I was just, I thought, this is it.
This is the break.
This is it. This is the break I've been waiting for. And I still saved the letter I got back from them, which
too late.
Big pass. But the two words I recall most dramatically were tortured dialogue.
Wow.
And thanks. And that taught me a pretty heartening lesson.
That was probably some of the nicer language, right?
Yeah. They were kind. They were, if anything, they were kind.
I guess that's one of the problems with when you do write slow, is it creates all this expectation and hope and everything else around the copy. Like it really kind of makes you want to get this feeling of, there's a lot of pressure. The longer you take, there's more pressure for it to be good because you've taken longer. Like it's both, right? It seems to me like, you think it will be better if you take longer. And then when it does take longer, you're like, oh my God, it's gotta be better now, cause I've taken this much time and I've invested this much effort and like all that. So yeah, it can be exhausting. It's an exhausting loop.
It is. And the reality of the situation is there is no correlation. Your best copy is when you actually are speaking in your own voice with passion.
Right. I 100% agree with that. Like my best promotions that I've done have been first person or very close to like, it's my experience, even if it's in the, whoever's words, but I'm almost writing it from my point of view. Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That you really believe
yes
in what you're saying and that it's going to make a difference in the lives of the people you're writing to, or the person you're writing to. And you're just saying it like I'm sitting here talking with you one-on-one,
right?
Or one-on-two, whatever this is, or one-on-6,000 or whatever, 7 million, who knows,
right.
But
It's definitely closer to 7 million. That's yeah.
That's a fraction.
That's a fraction. But it's like, I'm just talking directly to one person.
Right.
And I'm sharing what matters to me. And that's when copy has real power.
Sure.
And that's, you're just speaking. And that's why I think that's one of the keys to, so it's mindset. It's getting in your head that you don't have to agonize over every word. In fact, that slows you down. Another thing is understanding that the pressure you talked about, Sean, just a moment ago, you don't, with copy, you just don't know until you ship it.
Right.
Oh yeah.
It's all conjecture. It's all like, I think it's going to work. Mm-hmm. I think this is the best work, but you don't know.
Yeah. And that's something I've been telling the agency I run now, like some of my copywriters and even the clients, I'm like, we could all love this. We don't know if it's going to work until we get it out there. Mm. And I'm sorry. Like I would love to, you know, I'm getting older and I'm like, I just tell people like, you don't know, like you just don't know until you get it out there. I've been behind, like you, I've been at enough tables where everybody's like, yeah, this is going to be great. And it goes out and it's a, you know, it's pretty much a dud. And then you got others that a copywriter has to fight for, and it goes on to smashing success. And everybody was like, I don't know. I don't think that's going to work. That's a little too out there, a little too whatever. Mm-hmm. And it does great. Like it's amazing how you just can't, you can do all the fundamentals, but you still don't know.
You still don't know. So in that respect, that's why the mindset thing is so important. It's just understanding that and embracing it, that your job is to get this thing out the door to find out how good it is. And then you test it. And that kind of, maybe this goes back a lot to my background at Microsoft. I spent 15 years at Microsoft doing a variety of different roles, never climbing the corporate ladder, all just kind of like this, you know, which is just, oh well, but I got to do a lot of fun jobs. I worked on the first documentation for multimedia Windows, for video for Windows. I worked on the first documentation for that. I was a project manager for a number of websites and actually development tools for interactive television. I worked on that kind of stuff. And I also did game design. And so I had on some Xbox games, and I did the instructional design for Flight Simulator. Mm-hmm. And I worked on Age of Empires. I had really a fun career. But Microsoft taught me that you get it out the door. Mm-hmm. And you always make it better on the next version. And you always make it better on the next version.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You can't sell it if you don't ship it. Mm. So another mindset
that thing. Explains so much about Microsoft products.
Oh, yes, it's bad, Jake. Hey,
you know. That explains Vista, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Everybody remembers.
Oh, good
Vista.
Lord! Yeah, Bob, Microsoft Bob. I was peripherally, I had a peripheral involvement with Bob. Only. Yeah.
So before we get into your next point, like, how did you make the jump from Microsoft to copywriting? Yeah, like, really? Seems like an odd.
Well, that's intriguing too. So I was at Microsoft 15 years and I'm an old guy. Like, you know, I'm not saying like you guys aren't, you're talking about, on my 50th birthday, which is, on my 50th birthday, my boss was hanging up like this, you know, happy birthday, you know, thing on my wall. I said, hey, Alan, I got to talk to you. I quit on my 50th birthday to start my own business. Now my own business wasn't, it probably could have been a tech writing business, but it wasn't. It could have been I wasn't a software business. It actually, I went into full-time magic.
Oh, wow. Huh. Cool.
Like being a magician.
Right. I was Turk the Magic Genie, and I was probably one of the busiest professional children's entertainers in the entire Northwest. Wow. I was doing 200 to 300 shows a year. And wow. And the reason being, I'm a pretty good entertainer. I mean, I'm not a magician, but I'm a good entertainer. I like kids. But I really got good at marketing. I had a really good marketing system in place in terms of using Google AdWords. Sure. That based on the keywords, went to different websites, all kind of around the same type. Like if you said you had children's birthday party, you went to one site. If you said children's entertainment, you went to a different site. You said magic show, you went to a different site.
Nice.
And they all were written as sales letters to the prospect.
So where did you learn about that? I mean, because you're coming from a pretty corporate world, right, where direct response is not like a big thing, I would imagine. So where did you first pick up about, was that intuitive? Like, did you read a book somewhere?
I kind of first discovered this universe by seeing an ad in a magic. I've always been into magic, been magic.
Okay.
And I saw an ad in Magic Magazine. It says, how to make $100,000 a year as a.
There you go.
All right. And it was, you know, standard lead gen. So yeah. I didn't realize it. Standard lead gen piece by a guy named Dave D, who is my first mentor. Yeah. Great guy. I bought Dave's course.
Was it the psychic salesperson?
Oh yeah. So that gets right, so I bought right back
here. I thought there might be a connection there somewhere with Dave. Yeah,
I've got the psychic salesperson right back here on my shelf.
Awesome.
Great course.
Great. Oh, that's fantastic. It is. And he's a great, I kept buying stuff from Dave, you know, stuff from Dave. And eventually I started doing all this stuff. This is why I was still working at Microsoft. And I was doing shows on the side, you know, and eventually I started doing stuff for Dave. So I bought all this stuff from Dave and I went to his events and everything else. And he started paying attention because I started actually implementing. And he started handing off little projects to me. I bought his business to magicians from him. So he had about 1,000 magicians worldwide and like a catalog of different products. I bought that from him. So when I left Microsoft, I had that info business as well as the magic show business.
Okay. Wow.
So I learned how to do copywriting, selling the info. I really learned the info business. I'm pretty techie. I built my own website and all that stuff and set it up with the CRM and built all that stuff, hooked it all up. And I had like a list of about 50, by the time I finished, I had about 1500 people on my list worldwide. And I was sending out daily emails and that kind of process. Mm-hmm. Well, Dave got hired and I did a lot of projects with Dave. I did a lot of the psychic sales stuff with Dave. There may be stuff in that I actually helped work on, to be honest. I did a lot of the stuff with him, helped him on launches and he wound up becoming a VP of marketing at GKIC.
I was going to say, I thought he was kind of in that same time period. He was kind of the guy doing a lot of the stage talks at
Info Summit. Yep.
Yeah.
And so he came, and when he got on board, he recommended hiring me as a head copywriter.
Okay.
I had to pass an audition letter or whatever, see how well I wrote in Dan's voice, and I could write in Dan's voice. I'm an old grumpy guy. It wasn't too hard. I can write, Cleveland Browns. Blah,
Right.
Yeah.
That's interesting because Dan definitely has a very, if you study copywriting, he's got a distinct voice. Mm-hmm. Like his copy's his sentences are a lot longer than you would expect from a lot of copywriters. I mean, there's a lot of, you know,
they're commas. Witty too. Very witty.
Yeah. Yeah. With the dry humor. Yep. Like, but the biggest thing I noticed is how long a lot of his sentences are compared to more modern copywriters, especially now. That use a lot of short, choppy copy, right? It's just, it's a lot, you know, has a certain cadence, and his is a little bit more flowing longer. I do think part of that is age. I think, the older you are, the more you're willing to write like that and read like that.
Sure.
That's probably true. I would say that's probably, I just write, my own writing is probably a little more brisk. You know, and my own voice is much more brisk. But writing as Dan's voice, you just had to immerse yourself in Dan. I mean, I immersed myself in Dan. And I'll give you one. This is a tip from Dan that was buried in his writings that I think is a great editor in your head. You know, because you have the editor in your head telling you your writing's crap. You're writing crap. This is the editor I think you want to have. And it's from Dan. And it was buried deep. It was like a toss-off sentence. He said, somebody asked him, how come you're such a good copywriter? He said, I try to say interesting things in interesting ways.
Mm. Yeah.
And I try to evaluate everything I write with that in mind. Am I saying something interesting in an interesting way?
So when you say interesting way, let's break that down a little bit.
Let's, like, what's, what is that? Examples.
yeah, maybe an example or two that might come to mind.
You want to say things that use words that are surprising. Mm-hmm. For example, like, you say you're an expert, but you could, I'll just say Dan's concept of the renegade millionaire. Now that was a new way of putting it back when he came up with it.
Sure.
Right.
That was an interesting way of saying a type of mindset that isn't, well, I want to rise the corporate ladder and I want to make lots of money by investing prudently, et cetera. And he took a whole different angle on it with the word, with the terminology renegade millionaire. So that's, it's something you didn't expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So try to say things that are unexpected or use word combinations that you wouldn't expect. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important in copywriting, because copywriting, if it's not interesting,
it doesn't keep them. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you're, I'm sure is, so are you into NLP and just kind of that language and all that stuff? Bit. I know we all tend to get into a little bit as copywriters, but I mean, it kind of makes me think of that, where you want to use very words that can't really be misunderstood for something else, right? Because if your words are too common, they usually have like 6 or 7 definitions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you use words that are a little bit more specific, a little more interesting to use your word, then it's a lot more clear too.
Yeah.
Like interesting words tend to be more clear.